You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Thursday, the 18th of February, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming live today at radioalbion.com because we have with us geopolitical analyst Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson from rustjournal.org. Matt, good day, sir. I hope the weather is better for you than it is for Grandpa in Texas. How are you doing?
Well, people in Texas aren't exactly used to that kind of thing. God knows, I think it's Armageddon down there. But, you know, you always ask me how I'm doing. But how's Sven doing?
I'm pretty good. It's a nice and sunny day today. It's warmed up a little bit here in Britain at the moment. Of course, where I am, it doesn't get nearly as cold as it does where you are. And it doesn't get nearly as cold where Grandpa is. And what we're talking about today is actually, I think that's quite a cold area as well. We're going to be talking about the Black Sea today and Crimea. Is that a cold area, Matt? Is that colder than Britain? Is it an icy area or is it a temperate zone?
Oh, no, it's definitely not an icy area. Remember, it borders Turkey, the northern part of Turkey. It's one of the nicest. That's why, you know, so many of the old Soviet vacation homes for high party members were there. It's especially in Crimea. So, no, that's a huge tourist spot.
Right, so it's a nice area. It's not the sort of area that you want to have NATO shooting missiles at, even if they are just dummy missiles. What we're going to be talking about today is NATO provocations in the Black Sea, and we have talked about this a little bit last year, and we've talked about general provocations by NATO towards Russia, and we're talking about it today because there's been a current provocation which happened yesterday. Two Su-27 interceptors escorted two French fighters and a tanker aircraft away from Russian airspace over the Black Sea, the Russian military said, as video of the encounter in the sky appeared on social media. The Southern Military District deployed the interceptors on Wednesday morning as the trio of foreign aircraft appeared on their radars, the National Defense Control Center said in a statement. The two interceptors identified the air targets as a group of French Air Force planes that consisted of a KC-135 aerial refueling tanker and two Mirage 2000 tactical aircraft and shadowed them over the Black Sea, the NDCC said. After the French aircraft turned away from their approach to the Russian airspace, the Russian fighters returned to base. Their flight was in strict compliance with the international rules of using the airspace, the NDCC added. Wednesday's interception comes amidst increased activity of NATO aircraft and ships in the Black Sea at the invitation of Ukraine. Last week, Kiev proposed to the US-led alliance to increase air operations in the airspace over the sovereign territory of Ukraine and over open waters. This was a reference to the Crimean Peninsula, which separated from Ukraine and joined Russia in a 2014 referendum. The air and sea incursions were not just limited to Europe. In November, the guided missile destroyer USS John S. McCain crossed the Russian maritime border near the far east city of Vladivostok, only to be chased off by the Russian Navy destroyer Admiral Vinogradov. I mean, this is really quite serious, Matt, isn't it? I mean, interfering with another country's airspace, invading that airspace. I mean, it could be seen as an act of war here. We've also had missiles fired at Crimea from Romania, although apparently they were dummy missiles. And this is all about the Crimeans, who say that they want to join with Russia. They had a big vote on that, and something like 99.9% of them said, yay, we want to go and join Russia again, because they were a part of Russia before. So it's not like NATO is claiming that they're going to be liberating the Crimeans from the oppressive Russians. This is really just a clear provocation against Russia, isn't it?
Well, as far as Crimea is concerned, that's the big excuse that NATO is using here. Crimea is about 70% Russian. The minute it voted, and one of the reasons it voted, you know, like 97% to join the Russian Federation is that it would take the ruble as its currency. Since the Ukrainian hryvnia is almost worthless, their savings, you know, tripled in value overnight. They're now a prosperous place with, you know, Russian and Chinese investment coming in. They're rebuilding airports and everything else. It's been extremely positive for them. Ukraine is a fourth world country, unfortunately, now, thanks to the West. But we've done at least two shows over the last few years on this phenomenon where the West is, and I'm surprising they're using French Air Force since they don't want to be a part of NATO really anymore anyway, but deliberately invading airspace, coming very, very close to important installations, and almost begging the Russians to do something about it. And this happened in China too. So as everyone's been talking about, you know, the election or the capital thing, censorship, NATO is secretly trying to start a war, whether it be in the Pacific or in the Black Sea area. And so they're using the Crimean nonsense that has somehow been invaded and absorbed unwillingly into the Russian Federation as their excuse to do this. But clearly, Crimea is so much better off economically in every other way. And with what we talked about a few weeks ago about the censorship of Russian media in Ukraine, I can only imagine what it would have been like if Crimea had stayed in that sinking ship.
Well, I remember hearing about the fact that all their pensions had increased and their welfare had increased. You're pointing out there that there are these military installations that are in the Crimea that these aircraft are buzzing over. Now, am I correct in thinking that that is the main Russian military base and that was there before they took over Crimea? Am I correct in thinking that?
Yeah, I mean, the Black Sea Fleet used to be the center of not only the old Russian, but the Soviet Navy. Crimea had always been a part of Russia. It's a Russian area. And it's always been fairly prosperous until it became a part of Ukraine. And as that country was sold off to the West, Crimea said, we can't take this anymore. That kind of mismanagement. Ukraine is now a full colony of the EU and NATO. They have no functional independence because they have no functional economy. Crimea has gone in the complete opposite direction, which is an embarrassment to the West and to liberalism in general. But yeah, this is a place, of course, now that it's part of Russia, there is going to be a military presence there. And of course, now Russia is going to have to build it up because of things like this. So it's a deliberate provocation. It's a deliberate attempt to start a war and a war that the West can't win.
So NATO is effectively buzzing right over the most important military base that Russia has. They're making incursions into the airspace right by that. And also, as we pointed out there, there have been incursions in the Pacific as well. A notorious US naval destroyer sparked a diplomatic incident back in November 2020 after Russia claimed that it had launched an incursion into its territorial waters. The USS John McCain, a specialist combat ship designed to hunt submarines, was operating in the Sea of Japan, also called the East Sea, off the coast of the Russian Far Eastern capital Vladivostok. Authorities say it was more than 2 kilometers inside Russia's internationally recognized maritime border. A statement from the MOD in Moscow said that the vessel had violated Russian waters and was warned of the unacceptability of its actions by the Yudaloy-class destroyer Admiral Vinogradov, which had been tailing it. The communique added that the sailors had told the American ship of the potential of resorting to ramming in order to force the trespasser out of the territory. The US Navy claimed in a statement later on Tuesday that the vessel's so-called freedom of navigation operation upheld the rights, freedoms, and lawful uses of the sea recognized in international law by challenging Russia's excessive maritime claims. Well, it seems as if they went in 2 kilometers. I mean, this is not a mistake. This is deliberate. And to actually have to threaten to ram the other ship to get the trespasser out of the territory, I mean, that is really serious. That is threats of actual violence. I mean, this is a potential war could have been started by this. This is very serious. I don't recall actually hearing about this in November. Matt, what are your thoughts on it?
Well, like I said, we were worried about other things at the time. And, you know, even I missed this. But this is an old, you know, Western tactic. This is how the British got the Americans into World War One, by deliberately, you know, bringing the Lusitania right into a wolf pack. They did it in North Korea in the late 60s with the Pueblo incident. They're always doing this. And of course, so the Lusitania gets fired on. It was warned. Didn't matter. It was packed full of ammunition. And then, of course, the Western press said for no good reason the Germans sunk this ship in international waters. And it's the exact same thing. This is an ongoing – I even did it in the Crimean War, my paper on that. This goes way back. This is a common Western tactic for a long time, especially as far as the Russians are concerned. And it's happening in the Pacific. It's happening in the Black Sea. It's happening in the North Atlantic. And the U.S. somehow, because it's an empire, believes it has a right to do this. It doesn't have to abide by any so-called international norms. It's always a double standard. And the point is to provoke Russia into a war to save the dying U.S. economy and the U.S. empire.
Well, it's interesting they use the USS John McCain as well. This is not the first time the USS John McCain has been involved in high-risk incidents at sea. In 2017, 10 American sailors died after the vessel collided with a Liberian-flagged tanker, resulting in flooding and putting the warship out of action until October 2019. An investigation into that incident warned of an overly complex touchscreen system used to control the ship's throttle and a lack of training for its crew. While the ship was originally named after his father and grandfather, both admirals in the United States Navy, late Republican Senator John McCain was added as a namesake in 2018, less than 2 months before his death. The vessel has repeatedly been singled out for criticism by President Donald Trump, while McCain himself had been one of Trump's biggest critics, arguing that his 2016 election campaign had fired up the crazies. The Wall Street Journal reported in 2019 that White House aides had asked for the ship to be moved out of sight of the president on a trip to Japan in 2019 in order to avoid angering him. On this Tuesday afternoon, however, the commander of the U.S. 7th Fleet claimed the vessel had not been expelled from any nation's territory and had been conducting a so-called freedom of navigation operation. In a statement, the American Navy went on to claim that by conducting this operation, the United States demonstrated that these waters are not Russia's territorial sea. They argued that the disagreement arises from whether the Peter the Great Bay can be considered historic, which would make it subject to different rules under international law and therefore affect Russia's sea border. And I'm interested in this, Matt. What they say here, can it be considered historic? I guess because once the Soviet Union fell apart, they said, well, Russia has the borders that the Soviet Union had. But what about Russia's borders before then? What are they talking about here when they say this disagreement is whether the Peter the Great Bay can be considered as historic? What does it mean there?
Well, it's sort of like not being able to tear down an old building in New York City because it's been designated a historic area. You know, this goes back to the attack on Port Arthur in the Russo-Japanese War and everything that happened in that part of the world. But more importantly, it's a ridiculous technicality to actually believe that they're willing to start a war over whether or not a region can be considered historic. I'm not sure what treaty that might refer to, but I think the more important thing is how, you know, I have on my Patreon page, I have a several articles on how the U.S. military is actually falling to pieces, especially the Navy. That first paragraph, the John McCain got into numerous accidents because the touchscreen system was too complex and that the crew was untrained in this overly complex touchscreen system. What the heck is that? They didn't know how to sail the ship is what they're saying here. And my God, this is a group of people who's going to take on both Russia and China at the same time and all their allies. And they literally can't pilot a ship because it's too difficult for them. That's the most extraordinary thing I can imagine.
Well, it's up there with the other comment, isn't it? That they say here that by doing this, they demonstrated that these waters are not Russia's territorial sea. Well, they were threatened with being rammed by one of Russia's boats and they had to hightail it out of there. I think that does demonstrate that it is actually Russia's territorial sea. Moving back to the Black Sea, we are told that NATO view the Black Sea as a battleground. Relations between Russia and the West are in choppy waters, according to NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, who says the Black Sea is the new battleground in the US-led bloc's fight for influence and control in the region. At a joint press conference with Ukraine's Prime Minister Denis Shmigal, I mean, isn't Shmigal the alter ego of Gollum in Lord of the Rings? Prime Minister Denis Shmigal on Tuesday, Stoltenberg said that we have seen a significant Russian build-up in the Black Sea, not least with the illegal annexation of Crimea and also with more naval presence in the year. However, in the same breath, he pointed out that NATO has increased its military presence in the Black Sea region because we recognise the great strategic importance of this region for all NATO allies, but also, of course, for our close partner, Ukraine. So he's complaining that there's been a Russian build-up there, and it's in response to the NATO build-up there, which they seem to think is perfectly fine, but it's not okay for Russia to build up its military on Russian waters. Matt, what do you make of this?
Well, the funny thing is that this guy, Shmigal, he is one of the oligarchs in Ukraine. If you look at a picture of him, he's frighteningly ugly to look at. He looks like a camel. And he was put in charge of Ukraine's COVID-19 response not too long ago. So the guy is clearly, very much a globalist partisan. But his whole career kind of makes me laugh. But here he certainly has no competence in this area. But more seriously, to think that Ukraine could ever be a part of NATO, and allegedly they're supposed to be, We'll talk about that in a second. But the Black Sea is extremely significant. You have five countries border it or have coastlines on it, including Russia, including Turkey, even a little bit of Greece, Bulgaria, Romania. Trying to bring all these countries into NATO or the EU. Bulgaria and Romania got into the EU despite violating all of its standards to get them in so they wouldn't become part of the Russian sphere of influence. Turkey was wavering for a while. There may be a war between Turkey and Greece over this. So it could go either way. This could be a complete disaster for NATO. So picking a war with Russia might be exactly what it takes to bring all these countries into the NATO alliance, depending on how it goes. But again, since they don't know how to pilot a ship properly, I have the feeling Russia's going to do very well in this respect.
So it's a bit of a tinderbox there in that Black Sea area. Well, Shmigal added that his country will start building two naval bases, one in the Black Sea and one in the Azov Sea. According to him, the endeavour is part of an international effort to step up the presence of Western-backed forces in the region as part of our cooperation with Britain, which is also helping us financially so this programme can be launched. In a move that will surely raise eyebrows in Moscow, Stoltenberg added that Kiev is recognized as a candidate for NATO membership. NATO allies help and support Ukrainian efforts to join the alliance. Joining the US-led organization has long been an ambition for the country, but one that has been fiercely opposed by Russia over fears of more military exercises and warplanes dangerously close to its borders. In November, NATO rocket launch tests in Romania saw missiles capable of hitting Crimea fired into the Black Sea. The deputy head of the peninsula's public chamber, Alexander Formanchuk, said that provocations against Crimea have become more frequent. Unfortunately, we are witnessing a further exacerbation of international relations and the international situation, and the topic of Crimea is a convenient reason for escalating such provocations. What is this? What does Britain have to do with this? I mean, we got involved in the Crimean War about 150 years ago. But it's not a part of the British Empire. It's nothing to do with Britain. Why is Britain being mentioned here, Matt, as helping financially with this? What is the point of that?
Because apparently London does whatever Washington tells it to do. And it's almost just it's one of the few regular allies that the U.S. has, Britain and Japan, at least for now. But you have two things that the U.S. did in 2019 and then a year later. And actually, we did a show about this when the U.S. pulled out of the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty. So the U.S. can beef up its mid-range tactical weapons in that area. And then more seriously, though, in the same category, laterally, the Treaty on Open Skies. The whole point of the Open Skies Treaty was that you had these mutual surveillance flights to note if one of the countries was building up its military forces. Now, both of those are Cold War things that had been in force ever since. The U.S. pulls out of them within a year of each other, saying now it could build up its nuclear forces and any kind of mutual surveillance. So they want to build up their forces in nuclear areas, in conventional areas, and in secret. But again, given the fact that Ukraine's army was beaten so badly by the breakaway republics in the Donbass, I can't help but laugh at the notion that Ukraine could ever be a part of NATO. It's kind of like Albania or Kosovo being a part of NATO with its 10 soldiers.
Well, I think they'll just get used for building these bases, won't they? They'll just be sent money by Britain to build these bases, and then they'll just put NATO soldiers in these bases. Isn't that what they're going to do?
Yeah, that's exactly it. And again, it's just one more provocation to have Ukraine as a part of NATO would mean that the breakaway republics now have an entire army, an entire continent to face militarily. It's all designed to taunt the Russians into, and of course, if Ukraine goes into NATO, as laughable as that is, that would cause a war.
Well, it's pretty serious for the Crimeans as well. I mean, they're being used as the excuse for this, but you got Romania firing weapons at them. It reminds me of what happens with South Korea, and you've got America with its troubles with North Korea, and then you've got North Korea firing all these weapons tests at South Korea. Because of the threat that America poses. You've got the same thing here. You've got these poor Crimeans who just want to lead a pleasant life near the Black Sea with Mediterranean temperatures, and they've got all these missiles being fired at them all the time. Well, let's have a closer look at Ukraine's wish to join NATO. After NATO finally took note of Ukraine's aspiration to get into the military alliance 10 years after its first application, Kiev praised the gesture and stated that its ambitions extend far beyond the symbolic status upgrade. The military alliance mentioned in a Friday press release back in 2018 that, among others, it recognizes Kiev's interest in entering the bloc, inviting it to engage in an intensified dialogue about its membership aspirations and related reforms. Although the gesture is rather symbolic and doesn't provide any guarantees, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko has praised this important, long-awaited and logical decision by NATO to raise Ukraine's ambitions regarding the alliance. "Our next ambition is a membership action plan," the president declared in a Facebook post, referring to the bloc's program on preparations specifically tailored for nations wishing to join NATO. Ukrainian representative to NATO, Vadim Pristaiko, also stressed that Kiev is not going to stop on the status of an aspirant country. "We are continuing to work. The only formal mechanism to get accepted in the bloc is the MAP. We will be asking for it separately," the diplomat told Interfax Ukraine. Indeed, the MAP constitutes a key preparation mechanism on the way to NATO membership. Yet even it does not guarantee admission for an aspirant country, according to the alliance's guidelines. Among the potential candidates, which include Ukraine, Georgia, Macedonia, and Bosnia-Herzegovina, only the latter two participate in the MAP. This year, 2018, marks the 10th anniversary of Ukraine's official request for the MAP at the 2008 NATO summit in Bucharest. Pristaiko noted, "While Ukraine always stated its willingness to join the bloc, it had deviated from the course during the Yanukovych presidency, the representative said, pointing out the non-alignment policy adopted in 2010. However, that non-bloc status, preventing Ukraine from joining any military alliances, was dropped after the 2014 Maidan coup under the new government's pro-Western course. Last July, Ukrainian lawmakers even passed an amendment making NATO membership one of the key priorities for government policy. And the one thing I want to point out here, Matt, is right back here at the beginning where it was saying with this aspiration, what they would have to do is make related reforms. And I'm guessing what they mean by related reforms is promote homosexuality in schools, promote gay pride, promote transsexualism, open up the borders to refugees, and promote diversity. Would I be correct in thinking that?
You would be correct. And they've been forcing this again. Ukraine is a colony of the U.S., the West, especially. It has no independence. Therefore, they try to have these parades and these movements, and they get shut down because local opinion shuts down these parades all the time. But I've read the initial documents for getting Ukraine into NATO. And if their rules were to be followed strictly, it's absolutely impossible. Essentially, what would have to happen is that the entire Ukrainian military would have dissolved and then remade from the ground up. To join NATO, you have to have a strategic equipment, ammunition, compatibility with all the other NATO countries, which would be a huge boon to the Western weapons makers. But it would cost hundreds of billions of dollars just to start. And Ukraine doesn't have 2 cents. So essentially what it would mean is that the West would then either have mercenaries or bring Western forces and build these bases in Ukraine and take over entirely. They'll have a few Ukrainian generals there who all made fools of themselves during the Civil War. But that'll just be symbolic. So NATO membership is another way of just saying that they're now officially a colony of the West. They don't have – but, Albania is a part of NATO despite not having an army. So these are just excuses to and Russia still is popular among Ukrainians. That's why they need to shut down all their newspapers. They need to throw their pro-Russian politicians in prison. And so they're talking about a civil war that, again, Ukrainians have already lost that because you do have independent states in the east. So ultimately it would just be to formalize their colonial status and just be an unsinkable aircraft carrier for the U.S. and Britain.
What's actually happening then with the Donbass region? You were mentioning just there in the east, because I can't recall hearing anything from there for the last couple of years. What happened? Was there a ceasefire? Did they get some form of independence? That they're not part of Russia like Crimea is. What's happening with the Donbass region? Do you know?
Well, I've always been disappointed that Putin has never officially recognized them, though he has sent aid there. It's been kind of a Cold War status for the last few years. They still run their own show. I mean, they have their own passports. They use the ruble. They have their own, central banking system controlled by the state. But of course, Ukraine still claims sovereignty over them. They don't pay any taxes to Kiev, which is part of the reason they left. You got to remember, most able-bodied males in Ukraine have been drafted, because they had a conscription for a long time. So all these guys have military experience. When the Civil War occurred during the Maidan riots in 2014, most of the Ukrainian army fell to pieces. They lost almost every battle, and they had a massive desertion problem to the Russians. So many of the POWs that the Eastern Ukrainians took were from Georgia, they were from Poland, they were from the Middle East. These were clearly mercenaries that the West was paying. A lot of the Ukrainians simply wouldn't fight. So their military proved themselves to be completely incompetent in every way. It's a myth that Russia ever invaded the East. There's not the only invasion in history where there's not a single picture of any military military movement. Nothing came over the border. They had some private military contractors working over there. But the Ukrainian army simply fell apart. They still use old Soviet weapons. And that's pretty much how the military runs. So to become a part of NATO, they'd have to change everything. They'd have to dissolve everything. And, of course, they can't do that. They can't keep up the small army they have now, let alone do that. So, but at the moment, as far as the East is concerned, it's just a Cold War status. There's supposed to be the Minsk agreements, the second one, which is supposed to still be in force. It gets violated all the time. Every once in a while, you say someone lobs an artillery shell there and hits a civilian home or something like that. But so it's pretty much a Cold War at the moment.
It'd be so much simpler if they just made their peace with Russia. But of course, they got historic grievances with the Holodomor against the Soviets. And is Russia really separate from the Soviet Union? Of course, this is the fear that they have in Ukraine. I'm sure we will return to this subject again in the future. Thank you very much for coming on today, Matt. Thank you very much to the listeners for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with Grandpa Dan. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.